Okay.
Morning, everybody. What's up, Denise?
Not much. How about you?
Well, everything is good on this December the 5th, 2018, 7:17 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And welcome back, folks, to Mark and Denise in the Mornings. This morning, I'm broadcasting from an undisclosed bunker location because I don't know if you saw Denise's Facebook post. She posted a picture of a woman from Cincinnati, Leslie, who ended an argument by pouring hot grease on the person she was arguing with. And Denise posted it with no comment. So I am in a bunker location where hot grease can't get to you. Let's just put it that way. I don't know what message she was trying to convey with that post, but I think I got the message.
Well, the thing is, I think that people don't know how to spot crazy as well as they used to anymore. Now, you know, when you looked at the mugshot of this woman, her crazy kind of like smacked you around. You weren't going to miss that crazy. So why you would even have a discussion near anything like hot grease in front of somebody who looked like, yeah, I look like I throw hot grease on you, I don't know. I guess you were just taking chances. But some chances are unnecessary.
And she's 61 years old, so that means that, you know, she's probably got a track record of doing things like throwing hot grease.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody should have known better.
Yep.
But you don't push this lady to the hot grease point.
Nope.
When she started moving toward the stove is when you should have said, you know what? I cease and desist. Argument is over.
Mm-hmm. But there seems to be this trend of people ending arguments with hot grease. A manager at a local Checkers here in Philly lost her job because she tried to settle an argument with a couple of customers by throwing hot grease in their car.
Oh, I saw that story.
So, you know, the hot grease method of, you know, settling arguments seems to be a thing now. And, you know, that should scare everybody. And I know one person indefinitely it frightens, the Reverend Al Green. He's probably having some nasty flashbacks.
Do you think he still eats grits?
If I were him, I wouldn't. If I were him, I wouldn't come within 15 feet of a grit for the rest of my life.
Oh, man, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, grits are really that good. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've been talking about trauma. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about that later in the show, but I don't know. That's asking a lot. Maybe the first year he probably didn't. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Al Green still eats grits.
Yeah. But, you know, not even I am rude enough to ask him that question. And there are very few questions that I won't ask people. But asking Al Green if he still likes grits, I won't do that. Because that's one of those questions that would make my mom, you know, make me hear my mom's voice in my head say, "That's not nice. You shouldn't have done
that." Wow. Could you see like some waiter or waitress, "Mr. Green, would you like grits with that bacon?" Oh, man. Listen, we got a great show lined up today. We have tons of guests in the 8 o'clock hour. And looking forward to all of those conversations. If you want to get in, I would suggest calling in during this 7 o'clock hour or the 7:15 hour. 888-329-3306. 888-329-3306. And you can also comment on Facebook Live. Look for Mark and Denise in the mornings. Mm-hmm. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be broadcasting live, from Arch Street United Methodist Church, right mm-hmm. on the corner of Arch Street and Broad Street. Can't miss it. Sits next to the Masonic Temple. They almost look alike. So don't go into the Masonic Temple. You won't get far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Come into Arch Street UMC, right across from City Hall. And join the conversation live and in person. We're going to have persons who'll be rolling in. You know, if you're listening out there from City Council, I'd love to have you stop by and at least shout out what legislation you're working on. We're going to certainly talk to folk from Power who's presenting us live. Shout out to Reverend Robin Heineke for opening the doors. And we'll talk to Power about 21st century wage legislation that is going before council on tomorrow. And Councilwoman Helen Gimm, I'm sure, will stop by to speak about the Fair Work Week legislation that she's presenting and others. And while we're speaking about City Hall, Denise, condolences to the family of the mayor, Mayor Jim Kenney, whose father, who he often cites as the inspiration for his running for mayor, getting in public office in the first place, passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, James F. Kenney Sr., who was a firefighter for the city for many years, has died at 83 years old. So, again, condolences to Mayor Kenney. I know that they were close just by listening to the way he speaks of him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And holidays are a tough time. Like, around the holidays, it's tough to lose people because it just changes the entire – your entire attitude toward the holiday. It's not as happy. And all you're thinking about is who's not there.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. So again, our condolences to him. Speaking of, elected officials, and fathers who are passing, the world has still been, reflecting on the legacy of George H.W. Bush, which recently brought together the current president and the 43rd president, George W. Bush, son of George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. And Denise, apparently 250 yards is too far to walk. And so it took an 8-car motorcade to drive the current president to see George W. Bush. 8-car motorcade, two and a half football fields.
For a 250-foot walk?
Yeah, I mean, Adrian Peterson could have done it. Sorry, Philly. No shade intended. He could have done it in like about 15, 16 seconds. I'm not saying you got to be Adrian Peterson, but I am saying that's a lot of money we spent to get you 250 yards, bro.
And the thing is, you know, the Secret Service would have been more than happy to walk you over there because that's kind of their job, but they wouldn't. How do you even drive 250 feet?
250 yards.
How do you drive 250 yards? I mean, that's, you know, wow. See, this is yet another one of those examples of how I know that someone didn't read the global warming report. Because if you read the global warming report, it would have told you that what you just did basically enlarged your carbon footprint by two or three times and, you know, brought the end of the polar ice caps just that much closer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one would think, given the fact that he has put himself on superhero level now, he would have just flown to see George W. Bush because, after all, according to his tweets on yesterday, speaking about his negotiations with China, he said, and I quote, "President Xi and I want this deal to happen, and it probably will. But if not, remember, I am Tariff Man."
Mm-hmm. Is that like Superman with tariffs?
A motorcade.
With a motorcade.
Superman
okay.
with a motorcade, right. Superman
okay.
flies.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel. She's got her own gifts and skills. Storm, she just creates a tornado and, like, rolls on the tornado.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine just pulls out those claws.
Yeah.
Apparently, Tariff Man needs to be driven everywhere he goes by an eight-car motorcade. I want to go to Wawa. Get the motorcade ready.
Heck, even Iron Man would just fly to Wawa. I mean,
Tariff Man, what is that?
Well, see, he was talking about the negotiations with President Xi and said something to the effect that they weren't going well and the stock market lost 800 points.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I really wish that someone would sit him down and explain how everything he does directly affects the world markets. I mean, if every tweet he fires off causes investors to get jumpy and start selling, or, you know, convinces people to buy certain stocks because they think that either Armageddon or mass incarceration is about to happen. So, you know, I really wish that someone would sit him down and explain to him 2 years into his presidency, which means he should know this already, that everything you do as the president of the United States directly affects the world's economy. And you probably have the folks in Europe who are already kind of done with, you know, Great Britain due to the whole Brexit thing, you know.
But see,
they're probably boy, would you shut up?
See, this is it, though. I was just having this conversation yesterday with someone, and I think that he knows this. I think he does. I mean, listen, maybe he is, I don't know, maybe his friends, you know, are in this whole, you know, buy low thing. So, you know, if he tanks so the moment he put that out there, the stock market rumbled, right? And people started losing money because he's Tariff Man. Then he comes back, no, I'm just kidding. And then the market steadies itself. And so, I mean, you know, does he have friends who are like sitting there knowing these tweets are going to go out and, you know, buying up stocks when they're super cheap? I mean, you can make a lot of money in one day. I mean, you can make millions of dollars in one day off of one of these episodes if you're ready. If you're in a position and you know you're ready. I don't know. Hey, good morning to Franny, Tamiko, Regina. Sheila said, she said that I'm in hiding this morning because I was going to probably bring up our famous debate about, who ought to be the Speaker of the House or an elected or appointed school board. So this probably would be a good day, Sheila, for me to bring it up. I'd be safe. What's up, Nas, Tawanda? Glad to see you, Regina, Bishop Peggy, Tamiko. Glad to see Karen in the house as well. Vanetta. I'll tell you, you guys are coming in this morning. Belle, Leon, what's going on? Sandra. Yeah, glad to see all of you all on social media this morning. And again, if you'd like to get in this conversation, please call in. So locally, Denise, big story. You remember the shooting death of Jeffrey Dennis?
Mm-hmm.
And Jeffrey Dennis was shot and killed in the Tacony section of Philadelphia and by plainclothes police officers back in the summer. The district attorney, Larry Krasner, had to recuse himself because he formally represented Dennis when Larry Krasner was a private practice defense attorney.
Mm-hmm.
The case then went to the state attorney general's office, state attorney general Josh Shapiro. Now, if you remember this story, folks, you'll remember that this started because the officers had a warrant to search a home. That's very key in this story. Their warrant, according to reports, was to search a home. It was not, you know, there are multiple types of warrants. We hear warrant, and I think we by default just think that means they had a warrant for the person's arrest.
Mm-hmm.
They had a search warrant for a premises. They saw this man in a car leaving and felt that because he was associated with the home, that gave them the right then to go and stop him. Now, what I want to know is what's going to happen to these officers who initiated this? What is your probable cause in stopping him with weapons drawn, blocking him and ramming his car repeatedly and starting something that ultimately leads in his murder? I don't understand how that happens from a home search warrant to stopping a person like you had an arrest warrant. They're not the same thing. So big surprise to everyone. State Attorney General yesterday reported that he is not going to bring charges against the officers, and they have released the video. You got to see the video. Fortunately, you cannot actually see where he is. It's hard to tell where a shot happened, so it's not. You really don't see that, which is good. But you do see the tactics that are used to try to stop him in the way in which the cars keep ramming him. He's trying to get out. They are completely in street clothes. Now, if you are a person who is, I don't know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. You don't know what's going on in just five or six white guys with guns in jean shorts run up on you and block your car. You might, too, try to get the hell out of there.
Mm.
The only person that I saw who even had something identifiable as police had a bulletproof vest that had police on the back. Black cop who was in the rear on the passenger side and not in a position where he would have seen it anyway.
Mm.
You're in Tacony, in an area where you got all kind of stuff happening. I don't know. Are you surprised that no charges are brought?
No. No, I'm not. And it's really kind of sad that I'm not. It's, you know... You serve an arrest warrant on a house that gets all jacked. A search warrant on a house. And because you can't find what you're looking for, you just go off when people are like, what are you doing up in my house? I mean, it doesn't surprise me because if I had a nickel for every questionable action questionable interaction is taking place between police and citizens just over the last 5 years, I could have been retired. I could have been chilling. I could have been in an undisclosed location drinking margaritas or big drinks with umbrellas in them or something. Because it's far too common. And you know, I understand that there's a certain amount of power that we hand over to law enforcement and our government and various other entities as citizens to kind of make the wheels turn. But this has been ridiculous for a while now, and now you don't even have the sanctity of your home to count on, and you used to at least be able to have that.
Well, and he wasn't even in the home. That's what I'm saying. So they mm-hmm. roll up to do the search warrant, and somebody's like, "Hey, that's him right there in that car."
Mm-hmm.
That's who? The house? That's the guy.
Yeah.
Well, you're not executing a search of Jeffrey Dennis. Remember, you're executing a search of his home. If Jeffrey Dennis, this is a reasonable question. If he had been, let's say he's a white male attorney of a prominent law firm and he's a partner and they have a warrant to execute on his home and they see him driving by, he doesn't stop, doesn't go into the home. Do you really think they're going to chase him down and do what they did to Jeffrey Dennis? Somebody's going to tell him, wait, stop. Our warrant is on the house.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a warrant for him or his car.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go, partner. This ain't a movie. This is not a Netflix special. This is not Narcos. You got to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
So they initiate this, and that's the part, Sheila, thank you for pointing that out. Sheila says that the AG is leaving it up to the Philadelphia Police Department to determine action regarding their protocol in this matter. So they're, oh God, thank goodness. Now we'll get to the bottom of it. Internal Affairs is going to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody call IA. I mean, look, I've never been a cop, but I've seen tons of cop movies. And if IA is like any of the movies I've seen, oh yeah, we'll get to the bottom of it. Sure we will. Sure we will. Their heads will roll. Heads are gonna roll. Mm-hmm. Wait for it. Somebody's gonna be, slamming hands on desks. Remember like when Axel Foley used to get in trouble in Detroit with mm-hmm. the police in 48 hours? Remember the chief cussing and screaming at Axel?
Yeah. And this goes back to the whole, what impact does television have on how cops see themselves, see their jobs? Because if you look at cop shows and you look at how cops are actually supposed to conduct themselves, those are two different animals. And yet you got cops out here acting like that it's like this is an episode of Blue Bloods. No, this is not an episode of Blue Bloods. Cut it out.
Right. Yeah, Nas, yes, I saw the guy run up and try to break the window out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a chaotic scene. And so, officers will say, well, given what happened in that moment, force was justified because their lives were in danger. Okay. Let's say we give you that, right? That after it escalated to that point, your lives were in danger. He was doing anything he could in the vehicle to get out of where he was. So let's give you that.
Mm-hmm.
But why was he in that position in the first place? Why was he put in a position to use the car as a weapon? Because your breach of protocol was such. You had no right to do what you were doing. Just because you are law enforcement, just because you have a badge, just because you carry a gun, this is the part that just drives me crazy. People think the Second Amendment, this protection against unreasonable search and seizure, that somehow it's only for other people, that when it comes to black people, that there is no expectation that you have, how many times, Denise, growing up, driving and you get pulled over from the police, what you got in your car? What do you mean? You got contraband in here? Weapons? Drugs? Alcohol? What do you mean? Get out. I want to look in your car. Can you do that, sir? For a traffic stop? I'll take you to jail if you don't want to do it. I mean, I'm not telling you this happened to me once. Growing up until I got to a certain age, this was almost the protocol. And for many young black people, you are socialized to believe that police can do whatever they want when they pull. You cannot. And this was absolutely unwarranted what they did, which led to his killing. And now nobody's going to be held accountable. Too bad he wasn't a Catholic. Too bad the cops weren't Catholic priests. because then maybe the attorney general would have gone after them.
Maybe. And the thing is, it's not that they shouldn't go after, you know, people who, you know, basically sexually abuse little kids. Because, you know, if you gave me 20 minutes and a room full of survivors, we could handle this for you, state of Pennsylvania. But, you know, if you're going to put that kind of effort toward one breach of the law, you should put it toward all breaches of the law. And I understand that it's not popular necessarily to go after the police departments in this time and space. But let's face it, the federal government isn't doing this anymore. The Justice Department is not coming to the rescue. The days of a Justice Department that would look at something like this and at least have the Civil Rights Division come down and see exactly what happened here, those days are over. They ended in January 2017 when we put a guy into office who felt the need to say that maybe cops should, you know, bang suspects on the head when they put him in the patrol car. And he brought in an attorney general who basically wanted to bankroll the mass incarceration complex. So, you know, states have have a responsibility now more than ever to make sure that their police departments are acting right. And they have an even bigger responsibility to get their police departments in compliance when they're not, because the feds are not going to do this for us anymore.
No, they're not. I mean, this is really frustrating on a lot of levels. And, you know, it's interesting. So I told you I was with the AG the other night at a program. Mm-hmm. And so you had all these law enforcement folk up there. And in this moment, you got to believe that he's got aspirations above being the AG. Mm-hmm. I don't know that for sure, but he's an ambitious guy. And he seems like he, you know, feels like he's headed somewhere bigger than state attorney general. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. But the thing is, the very people that wanted to see this addressed in a way that felt like justice are the very people you're going to be coming to ask for votes.
And, see, that's what I'm getting at. I mean, you know, we're in a different we're in a different era. When you look at the current AG, he is like the perfect mold for a Democratic person to run for governor, maybe U.S. Senator from a state like Pennsylvania 15, 20 years ago, right? Firm supporter of law enforcement, good relationships with, you know, black clergy types in the black community, kind of handling that tension well. We already know there's kind of natural, you know, kind of tension in those two groups, but you know, you can kind of walk that line. But I don't know that you can be that politician today and move forward, that you can just come out in this moment and say, cops did nothing wrong, sorry. I don't know. I don't think that is a formula that's going to win for him. If now maybe I'm wrong, but if he's got aspirations down the road, I don't know. I don't think this helps.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, if the idea is, you know, I have aspirations to higher office, then, you know, don't let your aspirations keep you from doing your job. Because you can get fired from your current job. Just ask the person who used to have it. You might have to go to a prison in Montgomery County to talk to her. But, you know, that's the idea.
Wow. Denise, this morning we're also going to speak in the 8 o'clock hour to a few guests. Actually, back to back to back. We're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act, right?
Yes, we are. We have a former member of the Obama administration, who's going to be calling in to talk to us about subscribing to the Affordable Care Act, which apparently subscriptions are down because let's face it, you've cut off 90% of the time that people needed to sign up. You're doing no advertising because you want to see this piece of legislation, you know, go down in flames despite the fact that people need it. So Josh Peck, from a former HHS official in the Obama administration, is going to be calling in to talk about how you can still get health care and why it's important that you sign up now. Elisa Burbage, who's a local community activist here in the city of Philadelphia, is going to be calling in about the Jacks tournament that she's having. Yes. So if
like
you,
Jacks.
Yes, like Jacks with the ball and the Jacks and everything. So if you want to get, I mean, if you remember playing Jacks in your basement or playing Jacks outside on the sidewalk in the summertime, or you just like the idea of watching grown people play Jacks recreationally, you're going to want to check this out because it sounds like a lot of fun. I know I'm going to be there. I'm trying to find some friends of mine to see if they want to come with me, and maybe we can all play some Jacks. And at 8:40, in the Philadelphia Daily News, late last week, columnist Helen Urbinas and reporter David Gambacorta did a story on the aftermath of people who were affected by mass shootings and what's happened to them since. And they're going to come on and talk about their story, you know, how they came, how it came together, and, you know, about the folks that, you know, they were talking about, and also about whether or not there are the services available to deal with what appears to be an epidemic of gun violence that has left people permanently scarred.
Wow. So very good interviews coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Again, don't forget tomorrow we're going to be broadcasting live from Arch Street United Methodist Church, 7:15 to 9 a.m. Bring Denise a large Wawa coffee, French vanilla, 3.5 Splendas. Just bring 4. She'll do it herself. Something to stir it with. And if you don't come in there with that, you got some hot grease waiting for you.
No, I did not throw hot grease.
I didn't say you were going to throw. I just said some hot grease waiting for you.
No. But here's the thing. What people need to understand is that's assault. And if hot grease had actually burned this person to the point where they died from their injuries, that becomes a murder charge. When all you'd have to say is, I disagree with you, and walk away, you know, folks need to practice some anger management. You know, while I understand that investigation, discovery, and oxygen need to fill time, they don't need to fill time with you. You know, I mean, it's bad enough that if aliens came down from, you know, Mars or somewhere, and they landed on this planet, and the only stations that they had access to were investigation, discovery, and oxygen, they would swear up and down that nobody broke up, nobody got divorced, or anything like that. You just got tired of your mate and killed them. Because that's basically what those networks show. So, you know, when people are running around here throwing hot grease on people, that's automatically what I think of. I'm like, okay, this is going to end up on investigation discovery. Because nine times out of 10, it does.
Wow, man. So, hey, listen, just got word from the attorney of Jeffrey Dennis, his family, S. Lee Merritt. He's going to call in a few minutes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, to give us an update. And while we're waiting on him, Denise, one other quick story that I think is important for us to lift up that kind of fits a lot of things we talk about. Man, thank God the Trump administration has finally rooted out voter fraud. It's real. There really is voter fraud, and they found it.
In North Carolina?
Yeah. And, you know, they got tough rules because they're the one. Look, nobody is on the cutting edge of cutting down voter fraud like North Carolina. Am I kidding? They've got the heavy voter ID law. I mean, they are serious about it, and they caught some witches apparently. Well, they're close to catching a witch. Mm-hmm. So here's the problem. It's a Republican. Mark Harris, who holds, I guess, about a 900-vote lead to be the U.S. House Representative from, the 9th District, 9th Congressional District in North Carolina, might actually lose. Now, it's allegations at this point, so it's not been proven. This is from Politico. Politico says that a contractor working for Harris's campaign has been accused of collecting and filling out hundreds of voters' absentee ballots. The allegations run counter to longtime complaints from President Donald Trump and Republicans about supposed Democratic voter fraud, and they come at an especially awkward time for the state GOP in North Carolina. The party just championed a voter ID referendum approved in November, and Republican state legislators are pushing to approve language implementing the referendum during a lame duck session before they lose their veto-proof majorities in January. This is, as one person has said, ironic. How's that sit with you?
I really wish that politicians would start reading the Constitution. I mean, it's your governing document. It's how you're supposed to conduct yourself within your office. And I feel like most of them have never picked a document up and read it. And because of that, they do dumb things that are easy to catch like this. But the thing is, if we still had a Supreme Court that was worth a darn, I could see this ending up there and the Supreme Court saying, you know, 99.9% of what you're doing here is totally wrong, so we're just going to get rid of all of it.
But the irony, though, I mean, this is the irony that, you know, the irony that you have in this case, the Republican being accused of someone literally doing what Trump always says, stuffing ballot boxes with illegal ballots, is now being attributed to the Republican candidate who holds the slimmest of slim leads in his race, which is now not being certified while this investigation is going on. At the same time that Michael Flynn and others were calling for Hillary to be locked up on the Trump administration side, you have his daughter doing the exact same thing, using an unsecured server to send out government emails. You got people on his side continually pleading guilty for things. My God, hypocrisy is not even the right word for this. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous. Hold on. I'm going to pause right there because we only have 7 minutes for the break. And I understand attorney S. Lee Merritt is on the line. He is the attorney who represents the family of Jeffrey Dennis. We were just talking about this story, young man shot and killed by Philadelphia police back in the summer. And as we said, the attorney general now is not going to bring charges against the officers. Attorney Merritt, good morning. Welcome to Mark and Denise in the Mornings.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, Denise.
Yes.
We've been talking about this story all morning, and I guess no big surprise, sir, that the Attorney General's office is not going to bring charges against these officers. The local district attorney has had to recuse himself because of his own conflict of interest in having, I guess, represented your clients. What are the legal options for the Dennis family at this point?
So there's two forms of recourse. The first is we give it back to the elected attorney general and let him know that unilaterally making the decision not to criminally prosecute this officer is expanding his power beyond what it was designed to do. Josh Shapiro has just been bragging for the past few months about holding people accountable, particularly holding members of the clergy accountable when they break the law and when they violate young boys. And in doing so, he impaneled a grand jury to investigate, to decide whether or not an indictment was proper. That's what we expect in our community. We know that police brutality is an ongoing issue, particularly in Philadelphia, that is deserving of a investigative grand jury to go out and collect all the evidence in a way that Josh Shapiro didn't do. He didn't impanel a grand jury. He didn't subpoena police officers to give testimony. He didn't subpoena witnesses to give testimony. He unilaterally sat with the case for a few months, waiting until he believed that he had media cover and the election cycle was over, and said he was not going to indict. Well, that is not his responsibility. That's one of those decisions that our Constitution, the Commonwealth's Constitution, the United States Constitution, puts in the hands of the people. If he refuses to do that, there's very little we can do to demand that he does that, but we can take it back to the Philadelphia County District Attorney and say, on behalf of the people, I understand that you recused yourself for propriety purposes. However, this is a gross miscarriage of justice. We are tired of seeing unarmed black men killed and police officers walking and completely avoiding criminal accountability. While you can recuse yourself, get one of your chiefs impanel a grand jury, let them see the evidence, because the evidence speaks for itself. The evidence, all the policy violations, the video evidence where you see Jeffrey Dennis shot at point blank range, once in the head, two times in the chest, when he does not have a weapon, when he does not pose a threat to police officers, that is more than enough for probable cause for criminal charges to go forward.
Now, could the district, now from what I'm reading, it's being left to the police department to decide whether or not there's any action that needs to be taken here. Have you spoken to them, am I correct?
Yeah, I have spoken to Commissioner Russ, and Ross, and what they're referring to is an administrative process in terms of the officer's employment, and that's always their domain. And I'm convinced that they're going to let this officer go because he violated some of Philadelphia's procedures in killing Jeffrey Dennis, and they should do that, but that is a separate consideration. They're not saying that it's now in their hands for the criminal consideration. That criminal consideration is always going to be in the hands of the prosecutors. I believe Krasner rightfully recused himself because of his previous relationship with this young man, with Jeffrey. However, in seeing that Mr. Shapiro has gone out of his way to deny the Commonwealth justice. And I say the Commonwealth, not just the family of Jeffrey Dennis, but this is a policy that all of us are concerned about, because we didn't even have a chance to look at the evidence or have the evidence presented to neutral fact finders. And so when Krasner sees that that's not happening, it's now his responsibility to step back in and say, no, these facts should at least be presented to the people for consideration.
So he could actually get one of his deputies to do that?
Absolutely. And he wasn't forced to recuse himself. He chose to recuse himself for propriety purposes. That's important. It was a choice, and it was a wise decision in order to avoid the appearance of bias on his behalf. However, when the bias from Josh Shapiro was on display for all to see, and it's time for him to step back in and allow our institutions to do justice for this community.
Yeah, and listen, let's be clear. Even if Commissioner Ross does the right thing in firing this cop, Nicoletti, the FOP is just going to fight, and some arbitrator is going to give him his job back anyway.
Yeah, well, and that's the reason you haven't seen him fired yet. I believe the Chief Commissioner Ross is doing the right thing and going through all the proper mechanisms to ensure that his termination is permanent. And he cannot even ensure that, because you're right, the FOP is a very powerful unit. I believe the FOP is the political power behind Josh Shapiro's decision not to criminally prosecute this officer. But I believe, at least, and time will tell, that what Ross is doing, in lieu of all the policy violations, and I can't find a policy violation of how this stop, arrest, and murder occurred that was consistent with what should have happened. They broke every rule. not only Nicoletti, but every member of his team broke every rule in attempting to perfect this arrest. I don't see how they overcome that within when they go through the official processes.
So Attorney Merritt, we got to run. We're up on the break. But one quick question, and I just want to be clear. I know initially it was reported that they had a search warrant for the home, not an arrest warrant for him. Is that still true?
Never had an arrest warrant for him. That's true.
Was the home in his name?
No.
Oh. So this all makes sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I tell people all the time, you don't know how easy it is for you to become one of these stories when people just abuse their power that way. So, Attorney, thank you for doing this at the last minute. Shout out to your colleague, Attorney Kevin Mincy, for helping connect us this morning. And as the story develops, please come back and share more with us at Mark at Denise in the Mornings.
Certainly, I'll be available. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right. That's Attorney S. Lee Merritt, representing the family of the late Jeffrey Dennis. Wow, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the other side.
WWDB Philadelphia, 860 AM.
You're listening to Mark and Denise in the Morning on 860 AM WWDB, a part of Beasley Media. Mark and Denise in the Morning is a product of Tyler Made Media, LLC.
Welcome back to Mark and Denise in the Mornings. The show is brought to you by Power, Philadelphians organized to witness, empower, and rebuild. Power is the region's leading faith-based organizing effort. And among other things, is deeply interested in criminal justice reform. This story of Jeffrey Dennis is one of the things that Power has been working on for some time around criminal justice reform. And so we're glad that the Power is a part of this show. Learn more about them at powerinterfaith.org. You can actually meet a number of people from Power, I'm sure, tomorrow as we're being hosted at Arch Street United Methodist Church, a Power congregation, and the Reverend Robin Heineke does incredible work there. I mean, man, his outreach and ministry to the homeless, I'm ashamed at times. When I go over there, I'm just like, man, I mean, just the ease in which he just, you know, works with a population that many people just can't, you know, just can't find themselves with the ability to do it. Really proud of him. If you haven't been to Arch Street, you need to go. It's a great place to send some Christmas support this year. Denise, hearing that story and hearing it now from the attorney, don't have a search warrant. They don't have a search warrant for a home that does not belong to you. Search warrant for a home that does not belong to you. You're in a car. I guess you pull up and you're like, uh-oh, cops, I'm rolling out. And they say, that's the dude. What dude? Do we have an arrest warrant for him? No, we got a search warrant for this house with somebody else's name, but let's get him. I saw Narcos. We can do this.
I saw Narcos.
I'm Kiki. Okay. That's Narcos Mexico, the new one. This could happen to, I mean, we really think, you know, this couldn't happen to us. This could happen to us quickly.
Well, it can happen to anybody. And that's really but the that, shame of it.
Yeah.
And that's really the shame of it.
Well, and that's why I think we have to. Right, right. And that's why you have to speak out about it, because, you know, it's easy to write this off as, I mean, you take the narrative of, go back and listen to the original reports. I tell you, one thing about this department, they are skilled at just killing your character before anything else comes out. Listen to the way in which this was described, the way in which Jeffrey Dennis was presented to the community when this first happened, how police spokespersons and the written statements given to the media. It sounds a lot like what happened to Brandon Tate Brown. You know, same thing that happened to David Jones,
mm-hmm.
That your character is assassinated. And so people then feel, oh, they were justified. Oh, he's a drug suspect. Suspected of something, folks, is not guilty of something. And even if you are guilty of selling drugs, it is not a murder sentence. It's not execution on the street. I know Trump said you should be executed for selling drugs, but it's not law yet. This is not the Philippines. This is not, you know, Duterte's police department.
Not for lack of trying.
Thank you.
Not for lack of trying.
Thank you. They're trying hard to catch up. My heart goes out to the family right now. The frustration they must feel in this moment. You know, I mean, even the department, I mean, look, when the commissioner comes out and says that something was wrong and that we need to fire the person who did it, mm-hmm. when a police commissioner with a city that has an FOP this powerful comes out and says an officer was wrong in how he did it.
Mm-hmm.
That is like screaming at the top of your lungs. There was something absolutely wrong happened in this moment and somebody needs to be held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And again, look, Lee Merritt said it like I said earlier. I mean, if he was surrounded by a group of Catholic priests, somebody be going to jail right now. I mean, the way in which, you know, the attorney general went after an old case like that. I mean, really. And again, not to say he should not have.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, if you're out there, you know, if you're a pedophile out there, like abusing children, yeah, go to jail. But if you're a cop out there also abusing your authority, shooting and killing people without justification, you too should go to jail and be sitting next to that priest.
Hmm. In the same cell.
And y'all same cell.
And y'all can talk about abuse of power.
I mean, they're both, hey, kind of the same situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ruins lives forever. Taking advantage of your power and authority over people who are weaker and more vulnerable than you. Same thing. And I just don't understand how you can be so aggressive on one mm-hmm. and then kind of on the other shrug your shoulders like, nothing here. Nothing to see.
Yeah.
All right. Go right ahead, Denise. Why don't you introduce our guest?
Okay. We have on the line Josh Peck, and he is a former administrator for the Department of Health and Human Services during the Obama administration. And you have until December 15th to sign up for new coverage or renewal coverage in the Affordable Care Act. And we're going to talk to Josh a little bit about, you know, why that's important. Good morning, Josh, and welcome to Mark and Denise in the Mornings.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you were in the Department of Health and Human Services during the Obama administration. Talk a little bit about, you know, the whole process of how the Affordable Care Act, you know, came into being and what you all were doing, you know, in terms of making sure that the word got out to people during that time.
Yeah, you know, when the Affordable Care Act passed, it was an incredibly important and big change. It did really two things. One, for people with incomes in the lower range, a family of four below $100,000, believe it or not, is sort of in that lower range. It created a vehicle that would allow them to get health coverage that they could afford. The second thing it did is it provided a whole slew of protections to make sure that the health coverage that people received was good. It made sure that if they got sick, that their coverage would help them. It made sure that they couldn't be discriminated, based on a pre-existing condition, and made sure that, you know, basic essential benefits were covered.
So, I guess, why is it, I mean, what should people look for in a healthcare plan? Because I know that since the Obama administration left and the Trump administration has kind of taken over the administration of this particular piece of legislation, I keep getting calls from people who want to sell me healthcare plans that don't cover anything.
Yeah, well, you know, probably my top suggestion is that if people are looking for coverage, that they go to healthcare.gov, mm-hmm. Or they call the federal hotline to enroll. And the reason for that is because every ACA, every Affordable Care Act plan, is required to cover some essential benefits and to provide these protections. And the only place that's legally required to only offer plans that provide this coverage are at healthcare.gov. And so one of the best ways to make sure you're getting a quality plan is to shop at healthcare.gov.
Okay. So, I mean, have prices gone up exponentially? And if so, how do people handle that?
So this year, nationwide, prices are down slightly.
Okay.
But the reality is that the price that somebody pays really varies a lot based on where you live. Sort of healthcare is local is a bit of the joke. So what I recommend is, and it's not just where you live, it's also how old you are and what exactly your financial situation is. So what I strongly recommend is even for someone who thinks that the cost of coverage is out of reach for them, I strongly recommend that they go to healthcare.gov, spend the 5 minutes it takes to fill out an application for coverage. And the thing that may surprise people is that plans that normally cost hundreds of dollars can actually be had for prices as low as $0 a month. And the reason for that is because the Affordable Care Act provides for, say, a family of four, financial assistance for incomes up to $100,000. So it's not for ultra-low income Americans. It's for pretty typical Americans making pretty typical incomes just to make sure that the price that of the health coverage that they're getting is affordable.
Okay. Now, you're working with Get America Covered, Enroll America. What kind of efforts are they doing to make sure that people know when the deadlines are, what they, you know, when they can apply, and what's available to them?
Yeah, so Get America Covered, we're working very hard to get the word out. That means we're you know, talking to people through reporters. We're working with some of our partners to sort of get the word out. The reality is, though, we're just a tiny nonprofit, and we don't have the resources or the access to information that the federal government has. And when I was in the Obama administration, one of the things that I did was work to get that word out. We had a very large budget in order to do that. It allowed us to put ads on television, to reach out to local libraries. The spectrum was pretty broad, but the unfortunate thing is the Trump administration has cut that budget by 90%. They've also cut funding for local assistance by 80%. So getting the word out about when the deadline is, December 15th, and the fact that these plans are available for these very, very affordable prices is really harder than it's ever been.
Okay.
So, Josh, So I mean, listen, and we get that, right? This is kind of right out of the Trump playbook, the same thing Matthew Whitaker talked about with the Mueller investigation. You kill it by just, like, choking off the financial resources. So is there an opportunity for a democratically controlled House coming in next year to say we're going to restore, are we going to create new funds for people who work with the ACA to, you know, have for media outreach or things of that nature? Or is this something that is solely in the hands of the president?
Well, you know, at Get America Covered, we do focus on enrollment. I think that there are a couple of things to keep in mind when sort of answering that question. The first is that, unfortunately, outreach funding isn't the only thing the Trump administration is doing to sort of undermine the effectiveness of open enrollment, and I think multiple things likely would need to be addressed to actually sort of tackle that problem head on. You know, I think that the most important thing that a new Congress could do to sort of help protect open enrollment is put in place some basic oversight that can help make sure that consumers are being protected as they're shopping. I think most people, myself included, work with the assumption that the federal government is A, following the law, and B, looking out for the best interest of the people that it's, you know, that the programs they're running are, you know, for. And, you know, I think that some you know, congressional oversight could go a long way in making sure that that's happening now. You know, I do hope that funding for outreach, and not just I hope, I think it's really important that funding for outreach be restored in order to make sure that people know when the deadline is and that affordable coverage is available.
So
what is your, I'm sorry, what's your, like, I mean, if you had, like, you know, 15, 20 seconds with someone who right now is just kind of thinking this is no big deal, I mean, what would you say to them? Because I'm still shocked that people are acting as though the ACA is going to always be there and are just kind of, like, you know, ambivalent about whether or not to get covered.
Yeah, you're right to be shocked. I think if there's anything that the last couple of years has taught us, it's that the ACA is far more resilient than I think anyone appreciated. That said, you know, I think that we, you know, this year, for example, enrollment is down about 10% over last year at the same time. And, you know, enrollment's still happening. We're still working to get the word out. But, I think that we have to be careful about sort of, you know, assuming that everything will be fine, because, you know, there are definitely, you know, some concerning trends about, you know, fewer people signing up this year.
Okay, so you have until December 15th to sign up for the Affordable Care Act, and this also includes the Medicaid expansion, correct?
So Medicaid, if falls into the Medicaid, so for example, in Pennsylvania, there's Medicaid expansion. You have until December 15th to sign up for coverage through the marketplace. Mm-hmm. The only distinction I'd make is that if you qualify for Medicaid, then you can actually sign up year round.
Okay. And I also understand that if you have, like, a changing life event where you're getting married or you had a baby or something like that, you can also change your coverage or sign up for new coverage related to that event. Is that correct?
That's correct. So, you know, I think the one thing that's the importance of December 15th is that, you know, up until December 15th, anyone can apply for coverage and get it, and it's a pretty easy process. Unfortunately, that easy process then shuts down until November 1st of 2019. So, mm-hmm. When you get sick, you can't just go and sign up for coverage. There are exceptions. These qualifying life events, like getting married, you know, if you lose a job and lose your coverage in the process, those are qualifying events. But signing up for coverage during those events is a little bit more complicated. And if one of those events doesn't occur, you're not eligible to get coverage until next year. And that's a long time to wait if you're sick.
Okay. Well, thank
wow.
you. Go ahead. Did you have a question, Mark?
No. I was just saying, wow.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Peck, for giving us our time. giving us your time. And go to healthcare.gov to sign up now if you haven't signed up already for your healthcare coverage. That's something I have to finish doing because I'm a diabetic. And I just before the pre-existing condition part of the Affordable Care Act kicked in, I ended up in the hospital for a month because of something related to my diabetes. So I take this personally. So everybody, remember, you have another 10 days to sign up for health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act. Thank you so much, Mr. Peck, for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, thank you. That was Josh Peck, a former HHS administrator in the Obama administration, working with Get America Covered to get everybody health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
Great interview. Hey, so Denise, while we're waiting on our next guest who's calling in about the Jacks tournament,
mm-hmm.
old school, you know, I'm doing a little reading up on it. Mm-hmm. Used to be called Knuckle Bones.
Well, yeah, because you ended up, like, scraping your knuckles playing Jacks.
Well, I mean, that and, no, I mean, look where it came from. So, well, she's actually on already.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to talk about the NFL ref who got suspended. but we'll come back to that story in a moment. Why don't you introduce Alicia to us, Denise?
We have Alicia Burbage. And how would I describe you? Because you do so many different things.
I guess that you could, an Omni woman, I do a lot of things. I guess I'm a community organizer and sort of like a go-to person, if you will.
Okay. And she is organizing a Jacks tournament, which when I saw that it was a Jacks tournament, I said, oh, I have to have her on the show to talk about that. So welcome to Mark and Denise in the mornings, Alicia. Why a
Good
Jacks tournament?
Good morning, Mark and Denise.
Good morning.
I guess my first question is, why a Jacks tournament?
Well, you know what? You play Jacks as a little girl growing up, and if you have that boy in the neighborhood or your cousins or your brothers hanging around, they watch you play Jacks, and oftentimes some of the guys got into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened in 2016, after the election, it kind of created, if you will, a Trump slump.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were in their feelings, upset, uptight, miserable, whatever. And suddenly a meme appeared on Facebook, said, remember this game. And it was ball and jacks. And then you had women and men in their nostalgic moments talking about, oh, I'm the best jack player in West Philly. Oh, I hold it down over here in this recreation center or North Philly. I got game. And so everybody's selling all these wolf tickets. And I said, I got the place. I got opportunity. Who got game? Who wants to bring it? Who wants to play? And a woman by the name of Gloria Chaplin, an avid Jacks player, she chimed in. She said, oh, I'm down. I want to play. How can I help you organize? Okay, perfect. Let's see how many people are going to sign on. About 15 people signed on and 14 people showed up to play on this cold day in September. And we had a throw together Jacks tournament. And it was exciting to see grown women and many notables in the city of Philadelphia showed up on this day. We had a judge.
Wow.
We had a communications executive. Sometimes you see her on TV.
Mm-hmm.
We had an astrophysicist show up. We had a high school principal, school teachers. And it was just an amazing gathering of women. And all we did was play Jacks. We just really wanted to have fun because in all of our lives of busy adulting and, you know, living and taking care of business. And we just kind of like let our hair down or take it off, whatever you had to do, get comfortable and let's play some Jacks. And so I didn't do it last year because I had health issues, but I was asked to revisit the tournament again and it's been heightened. So we have a referee that has officially signed on to ref.
Wow.
So that brings a little bit of heat, some competition. And so, again, you have everybody on Facebook selling wolf tickets. Now the men are involved, and they're charging up thinking, you know, they want to come get in the game too. So we're excited to do it this Saturday.
So I guess what is the setup here? Is it just like a bunch of, like spaces on the floor where people are sitting down and playing jacks? Are there tables? How is this set up?
Well, we're laughing about this because, you know, I posted we had like a practice round and some of the women can't get down on the floor. So some of them will be table top. And some of them will be on the floor. As you saw, you know, Danielle Patterson, who is a dear friend of mine, you know, she's competitive. And so she was on the floor and turned a very playful game of jacks into a very competitive game of jacks. So she's one of those ones to watch, one of those to, you know, she's going to take it to the floor. So anybody who can game on the floor, we have an open space for floor players, and we have tabletop if necessary.
Who's the judge?
Well, it's not even a judge. We have two refs that are going to watch the game. And what we're basically going to do, we're going to, you know, break out into teams, and whoever emerges as the one who can get to 20 games first will get into the next tier to play. And we'll keep playing until that one person wins. And what happened in 2016 when we did it is that we had like a knockdown drag out with two players, Joanne and Val, but we had an emergency and one of them had to leave. So we're going to start the game this Saturday with finishing up that competition. And
wow,
those ladies were vicious playing jacks, and they played a rapid game of jacks. I'd never seen that before, but they played a rapid game of jacks, and before you know it, I mean, it was neck and neck. So we're going to start the game, you know, with them finishing up what they started in 2016. So we have a ref this year because there are people who are coming to play who didn't play jacks in Philadelphia. And, you know, all, you know, people have their own style, their own game in various parts of the country, how they play jacks. And so we have some rules. We want to make sure the referee know what the rules are, like no touching. Once you fling the jacks out, you can't be moving all around the floor, no kisses, no touches. And, you know, it really gets to be kind of intense, but we really want to have fun doing something that's a throwback, that's old school, because what we tell the young bucks today is that you all don't have hand-eye coordination, and we know you learned that playing jacks.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many people are you expecting to come out, and I guess what's your cap?
We're really expecting about 25.
Okay.
A cap for me on Saturday would be about 40.
Oh, okay.
Where's it going to be held?
Well, Saturday is going to be held at the Cobbs Creek Community Environmental Center, which is located at 700 Cobbs Creek Parkway / 63rd and Catherine Street. And if the doors will open at 3. And we're going to start bowling at 4 o'clock.
Wow.
How can you play jacks on a table and not on the floor? I don't know. How does that happen?
Well, you know, some of the women
I know people can't get down, but how does that happen?
Well, you have to be very careful. You just can't fling the jacks as wide. You have to be a little more careful with how you fling the jacks out. But, you know, I played tabletop in 2016. It was okay. But when we started some practice runs, very comfortable getting down on the floor. It's just that you won't be getting up and down too much. And, you know, we had a lady in 2016 who actually was on crutches. And she tried to find her comfortable spot, but she ended up having to play on the table. You know, so we'll see. We have enough space if everybody wants to take it to the floor. But, you know, we will accommodate if necessary. But playing on the floor is best. Hardwood floor is even better.
Hmm.
Wait a minute. So are you expecting, like, young people to show up and try to take you all on?
Well, listen, you know what, Mark? I had a young girl on Facebook start cracking jokes. Oh, that's for old heads to play and so on and so forth. And I said, well, you know what? Don't sing it. Bring it. So hopefully she'll show up, and she's in her 30s, and so hopefully, you know, she'll show up and she'll want to get in the game. And I think that the young lady who she was in her 20s, astrophysicist, she couldn't get off her onesies, and we laughed at her until we were in tears. It's like, oh, so you have to be a rocket scientist or not be a rocket scientist to play Jack. You know, but for the most part, it's mostly adults that are on this thread on Facebook. But if they're bringing their young ones with them and they think they want to jump in and play, they can play. But it's a competition as well. But if they want to just have a friendly game of Jacks, they can take that into another room. But we're really coming out to compete. Have fun, but compete.
Wow.
Well, I was going to say, there's no such thing as a friendly game of Jacks.
No, I've seen fist fights over right. Jacks.
Hot grease, even.
No hot grease.
Don't play with the lady from Cincinnati. No, she'll throw hot grease on you if you win.
No, listen, because Ohio, I read over this stuff. Ohio has a serious Jacks thing going on out there. I said, wow. I said, so, you know, we're doing it for fun, but, you know, it caught on to a couple of networks. It's in Philadelphia in 2016. I think they did it just for the fun of it. But there's a network of us that kept the conversation going, and I'm just grateful for the women who just said, come on, Alicia, let's pull it back again. Let's do it again. I'm feeling much better. And so, you know, I'm excited to do it. Like I said, it's just really a lot of fun. We bring food. We bring penny candy. We throw it on a table. And that's it. There is no ed. It's free. It's fun. And, you know, hey, just come on out. Mark, you coming out?
Well, let me tell you. All right. Don't tell anybody this. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
As he says this on a radio program.
On my block. I mean, I grew up, it was like mostly boys on our block, and we played everything, football, basketball, baseball. There were only a few girls on our block at a time. You know, mm-hmm. folk like Danita and Tacy and Dorothy. And every now and then they play Jacks. And, you know, I don't know how it is that somehow we went from kind of watching them, teasing uh-huh. them, taking their ball, throwing it, to uh-huh. somehow for a little season there, we actually found out it's a fun game. But don't tell anybody that. In fact, we beat them all the time.
Your secret is safe with me. Your secret is safe with me.
I'm just telling because we didn't like to lose. So, you know, so whatever it was, Jacks, cards, whatever. But I mean, it is, you know, I want to just come see you all play this.
Please.
I'm unfortunately busy. I can't make it. Can you put it on Facebook Live? Because I can't be there physically. Can we see this? Please.
I think some of us can hook it up Facebook Live. I wouldn't be that person, but I'll find somebody in my network who will Facebook live it. And, you know, it's, I wish you could come out because there are about two or three men on this thread on Facebook that's saying, oh, we coming out. I used to play with my sister. Oh, I used to beat my sister. I've gotten text messages from men in their 60s saying, oh, I could take you in Jacks. I said, you know what? You know what? Come on. I like to see you try. But meanwhile, bring your Tiger Bombs, your Bengay, your floor mat, or your pillows. So that you have all the safeguards you need to play this game and take a whooping.
Listen, I'm accustomed by now as a pastor to hear members tell me, I can't make it to church tomorrow. I made the mistake of playing basketball with the young fellas. Or, you know, I went out and played some football. But I've not heard any of my members tell me, I went to a Jack tournament yesterday. I can't make it.
Well, I'm going to be watching to see who can get up and down off of that floor. And so it's just a good day. We spend so much of our lives adulting and being so mm-hmm. serious about everything.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is wonderful. So Wanda on Facebook said, sounds great. I loved to play Jacks. I was good. Margaret uh-huh. says, I used to play on my front step. I love to play Jacks. She said, and if you did have a kiss, you were not allowed to pop it. Regina says Jacks are for the floor! Exclamation mark. Dawn says hashtag love this. And, Mary wants us to post on the Facebook page. She'd love to see it.
Okay. We'll make sure it goes Facebook Live. I am in the conversation, growing up, I had an arch rival playing Jacks. Her name is Gail. Mm-hmm. She used to whoop me. She was old, about four years older than me, but she used to whoop me. And we would play hours on hours on hours through the pumpkin seeds and all the candy. We'd be out there from morning to night playing Jacks. I couldn't whoop her. but she's coming to play on Saturday.
Ooh.
He said, because I can still whoop you. And, you know, with all of fun, we were friends. And I'm excited that Gail is coming out and, we're just going to have fun.
All right, Alicia. So, Alicia, yes. Burbage is, running the Jacks tournament this Saturday, 3 p.m. The doors open. Give us the address again, Alicia, and any other information related to it.
Sure. The doors open at 3. The game starts at 4. We're holding the tournament at the Cobbs Creek Community Environmental Center located at 700 Cobbs Creek Parkway, which is actually 63rd and Catherine Streets. For those of you who live in West Philly, you know it's called Snake Hill, where the old stables used to be, where Sensei used to be. That's where the Environmental Center is. We invite you to come out. It's free, just free fun, fellowship, a good time with friends, and some reunions that will take place. And so, you know, if you got game, bring it.
Don't let Gail beat you again.
Well, listen, I don't know. I've been thinking about it. I don't know. She might, but like I said, we had to invite referees in because we have some serious Jack players, and we had some people say we going to try to cheat, and those are the older women. They said we going to come cheat.
Okay.
I have referees with black and white striped shirts who are going to be watching the game to make sure that we're, you know, that we're decent and in order.
Well, all right. I RSVP'd, so I'm coming out to at the very least check out the game. I don't know if I'm going to play, but I am going to check
no problem.
It out.
We invite you. Mark, we'll catch you next time.
I'll host it next time.
Oh.
Okay, you got it. You got it.
Yeah. 2019. You can bring it to Mother Bethel.
There it
I'll
is.
Host it.
Okay. Not a problem. Would love to.
All right. Have a good one, Alicia.
Yeah. See you
Everybody,
Saturday.
Have a great and wonderful Wednesday. See you on Saturday. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Wow. You know who will not be hosting?
Who?
I mean, who will not be refereeing, I should say.
Who?
Roy Ellison.
Nope.
NFL referee who's been suspended.
Well, because he called someone the B word.
Called a player a B. He called a pretty big player a B.
Ooh. Mm.
I saw that interaction at the end of the game where the player was going after the ref in the tunnel. And I'm thinking, you know, like, what is this player like lost his mind? Is he like on a steroid rage? Only to find out that he was going after him because the ref in the game told him to quit acting like a B.
Mm.
Apparently, this ref has been suspended before, back in 2013, for making a profane and derogatory comment to a player from the Washington team.
Mm.
How's he still? He's got to. They've got to get him out the league. He's not fit to. He's not fit to be a ref in a Jacks tournament. Like that segue?
Yes.
Seriously. Get your stuff together, ref.
Mm.
Crazy. Denise, I love that story.
Oh, thank you.
That's awesome.
Well,
Jacks tournament.
Well, the thing is, and Alicia's right, after 2016, everybody was so tense and tight and thinking about the future and seeing, you know, a whole bunch of clouds out there and not a whole lot of sunlight. So what better way to try and work through that than to go back and do something that you used to love doing as a kid? And I mean, shoot, Jack's in my house. Like, we play in the basement of my parents' house, and you know, sometimes it got a little ugly.
Oh man, let me tell you. Yeah, you know, hey, my mother-in-law's on now. She said that back in her day, you had to have clean linoleum floors to mm-hmm. play Jacks.
Oh yeah. A little piece of dust here or there could affect how the ball moved or how your Jacks went out. You know, it was no joke.
Look, Wikipedia says that it used to be called knuckle bones. They used to use the bone, a part of the ankle bone out of a sheep.
Mm.
That's where this game came from.
Okay.
And instead of 10 items, it was 5.
Wow.
Yeah, knuckle bones. I got to believe if you go far enough back, it was probably like human bones. But, you know.
Yeah, but But you know, let's not, you know, think about Jacks in Saudi Arabia and bone saws and all that crap.
Oh, man, you had to go there.
Had to.
Yikes. Hey, Teresa, your editor at the Philadelphia Sunday Sun says she wasn't half bad back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's Jax was one of those games that you could play if it was too hot outside to play regular stuff, or if it was too cold to go outside. You could still play Jax. You could have friends over, and, you know, you could just play all day. So after a while, you got good at it.
You should have seen the guys on my block, seriously, when somehow we started playing. Because we all acted like we were so tough. So the last thing you want to know, let the guys on the other block to know that you were like actually like enjoying playing. But you know what? They were probably playing it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody come around and say, I wasn't playing Jax. I was just over here messing their game up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. We needed that break, Denise. Thank you.
Okay.
Philly has been named by GQ City of the Year.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Have they been in the neighborhoods?
Wow.
I don't mean that as a slam on the neighborhoods. I'm just saying it's like, I get it. If you just look at our city from downtown, but you do know we have a 26% poverty rate. I don't know if you would call that a model city.
Well, no. And I think they're looking at it from an entertainment perspective.
Oh, entertainment. Yeah, okay. I get that. Mm-hmm. Entertainment, yeah, we hold it down. But we got some other problems we got to address. Come on. We need to step up. We should not be accepting awards being a model city, city of the year. 26% of our neighbors living in poverty and deep poverty, hungry kids. We're good at Jax, but we got some other issues.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, well, we got our last guests on the line. Denise, you want to bring them on?
Yes. If you were reading the Daily News or Inquirer last week, you saw a story from our next guests, Helen Urbinas and David Gambacorta, that looked at what happened to people who were involved, who were the victims of mass shootings, and some of the things that they're going through currently. And I wanted to bring them on because, you know, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about what happens to people after all the cameras go away and all the notice is, you know, kind of gone somewhere else. And what I liked about this story is it did that, and it showed that there's some holes in our system that we need to fill. So I'd like to thank David and Helen for joining us on Mark and Denise in the Mornings. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, what was the inspiration for doing this piece? And I know that you've been covering a lot regarding gun violence and its impact here in the city, but why take a look at this in particular?
So I'll jump in. I'm not sure if David's on the line, but as you said, I've been covering gun violence for years, as many other people in the city have done, and it's always really frustrating to be covering these stories and not see the response and the reaction and the action that you think needs to happen in order to sort of change some of these things. And one of the things that I noticed over the years is this thought that many people have, well, if somebody was shot and they live, okay, that's the end of the story. When it's really clear, especially from the story that David and I did, is that that is often just the beginning. And it's a beginning that's filled with a lot of frustration and a lot of hunting around for basic resources. And that's basically where we wanted to start.
So just how tough is it to get basic resources? Because you would think that, you know, there would be some victims assistance person that would be there to help these people as they try to live the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, David. I didn't realize.
Sorry.
Go ahead. All you.
We're like the Three Stooges trying to get through the same doorway.
Okay.
That is something that we kind of went in with a similar assumption, you know, thinking that certainly there are things in place to help people who find themselves in this situation. And, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. There are city, state, and federal aid programs out there, you know, that can assist you if you are in dire need of, you know, basic services like a ramp to get in and out of your house, or, you know, a modified bathroom that you could access if you're in a wheelchair. But what's missing is sort of an easy to find entry point. And, you know, what you really need, and what we learned from talking to survivors in Philly and across the country, is, you know, they need someone to point them in the right direction and help them to navigate, you know, sort of the government bureaucracy, which is hard to do in the best of circumstances, let alone when you're grappling with something that's this life-altering.
Well, I one of the things that kind of stuck out to me with your story is the number of people who find themselves paralyzed through these shootings, and, you know, how they sometimes have trouble accessing help. I guess is that a function of there not being enough help, or people not talking enough about the help that's out there?
I think it's both. I think it's a lack of awareness, and I think that there's also a lack of resources. There's just not enough. And of those that exist, to be honest, I don't think there's they're doing a good enough job of getting the word out, of making sure that those that they aim to serve know that they exist. And I think that that's what we found over and over again when we heard these stories. And even, you know, beyond the story that David and I did, you know, there was another column that I wrote after about a man who was shot in 1999 and spent the better part of 14 years, you know, dragging himself and his wheelchair up and down the stairs of the home he shares with his mother, only to make it to his living room, which he was confined in because he couldn't get up the stairs to his home. As they searched, he and his mom searched for a city program, they told me, that eventually did help to an extent, right? Because, you know, I mean, that is the very basic needs of, like, I'd like to get into my home. I'd like to get upstairs to my bedroom. I'd like to use the bathroom. And that's just the beginning of the needs that individuals who find themselves shot and paralyzed find themselves in.
Now, medical bills are probably a big part of some of the problems that these folks are trying to negotiate. Is there assistance for that? Are they kind of responsible for that themselves?
I think it depends on the circumstances. I mean, certainly, you know, there are Medicaid and other programs that, you know, will cover some of your needs. But as we saw with a victim from the Aurora movie theater shooting that happened in Colorado a few years ago, he recently needed to have his leg amputated. He had been shot in the leg in the theater. And, you know, his friends ended up having to put together a GoFundMe campaign to try to raise money to help him cover the costs of his medical bills and, you know, recovery and things like that. So you certainly, you know, if you do find that you are in a situation like that, yes, some of your medical bills are going to be covered, you know, if you have insurance. You're fortunate enough to have insurance, I should say, and Medicaid, or, you know, even Medicare, depending on your situation, you know, would come in and cover some of that. But what we kept hearing from these victims and their families were that, you know, there was a lot that wasn't covered, and that they were left shouldering, you know, enormous debts in addition to, you know, trying to grapple with the situation they're in, where, you know, their lives are changed forever.
Now, I guess, how did you get all of this information? Were there a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests? Did people reach out to you?
No, I mean, for our part, it just, you know, we went out and found individuals. You know, a lot of the, well, at least two of the individuals that we did write about, I had written about in the past, you know, but we wanted to take their stories and sort of set it in a more in-depth story. And I think what we really try to do with this story is not just set it locally or even regionally, but sort of nationally, meaning we know that as a society, we choose every day to, you know, whose lives are valuable, whose lives aren't. You know, we choose, you know, to pay attention, not to pay attention to the shootings here in Philadelphia. And those who are shot and killed or shot and wounded. But the fact of the matter is, and what we found is that this affects gunshot victims or gunshot survivors here and nationally. There are not enough resources. There's not enough awareness for them. We don't pay enough attention. We owe them a lot more, whether they're a person who shot on a corner in Philadelphia or someone who shot in a movie theater in a national mass shooting.
So what can we do? I guess, what can we as citizens do to kind of make people more aware or to even just, you know, kind of push back on some of the stuff that's, you know, left these people in these situations in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. you know, I think a lot of it kind of comes down to, unfortunately, political pressure, you know. We've seen now in you know, relatively small amount of time, a sea change in how our government reacts to and addresses opioid abuse. You know, that has been declared a national health emergency by the White House. And for some reason, we're not quite there with gun violence, you know, where you have someone like Ralph Brooks, who was shot and paralyzed in Philly, you know, 30 years ago, and the struggles that he experienced then are pretty much identical to what people are experiencing today. You know, there's not been enough progress in that arena. And, you know, we saw just in trying to get a conversation going about, you know, the government studying gun violence, how quickly, you know, the momentum just sort of sputtered out. You know, there seemed to be a fresh round of it after the Parkland high school shooting, and, you know, within the space of a few months, whatever politicians were out there, you know, calling for studying, calling for, you know, reasonable gun control, you know, that's gone very quiet now. So I think a lot of it has to come down to just pressure and keeping the spotlight on the issue.
Mark, did you have any questions?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm listening to the fact that, you know, you made the comparison to the opioid epidemic, and, you know, whether it's true or not, I think the impression is that most of these victims of gun violence are Black, right? And so, again, whether that's true or not, and the impression is, you're talking about victims of opioids, whether it's true or not, are white. And, you know, so, you know, it's hard not to draw these conclusions about the way we're rushing off, and rightfully so, to help people who are caught up in drug addiction that's leading to so many deaths. But, you know, again, what does it take to get the same kind of will politically from elected officials and everyone else? Helen, I was looking at one of the columns that you wrote. There's an inclusion conference that's actually exclusive.
Yeah, so it's in the city. It's hosted by Special Olympics. I'm going to sort of learn more about it. So I figured that's an opportunity, you know, to sort of learn more, and maybe folks who need resources can go. I'm not totally sure if that's specifically what they're going to be talking about, but I think if there's any opportunity to talk about inclusion, it absolutely should be open to the public. Should this one be open to the public? I mean, you know, knee-jerk reaction, yeah, but I don't know enough, so I'll go, and then I'll share what I find, and we'll take it from there. But sort of circling back to your comment about the opiate addiction and sort of how we're dealing with the epidemic and how we're dealing with that, I think you kind of nailed it, and I think that is specifically why we wrote about this from a national point of view. Because the fact of the matter is that people care about things, whether we're talking about the everyday person walking the street or the politician, they care about it when they can relate to the folks that we're writing about or who are suffering. And so hopefully this story will sort of move the conversation forward, because the fact of the matter is, it's not just affecting people in Philadelphia. You know, it's affecting folks that might look like you or your niece or your nephew or your husband or your wife. You know, when they're walking into a movie theater or a church or whatever. And so, you know, that's my hope. As someone who's written about this for a long time and remains incredibly frustrated at the lack of political will to do anything about it, I'm hoping that this story maybe moves it forward in a way.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thanks to the both of you for the work that you guys have done. And hopefully, as you said, this story just won't gather dust but might actually do something.
It was a great piece of reporting. It's just, don't read the comment section.
Oh, yeah.
Because I read the story, and then, like a dum-dum, I went to the comment section, and basically my faith in humanity was dashed once again. As it is.
Never read the comments, ever.
Yes, never read the comment section, because any faith in humanity you had goes right out the door. But thank you both very much for coming on and for doing such a great piece of work. And I hope that it does, you know, move the conversation forward. And also that it inspires people who work for these organizations that have these resources to put themselves out there and
Absolutely.
Let people know, hey, this is what we have. And if you need this, this is how you access it. Because I find that a lot with like little nonprofits that do this kind of work, they have such a small budget that none of it gets put toward putting the word out. And because of that.
And I actually said that in today's column. I said, mm-hmm. you know, no matter how fantastic your column is, mm-hmm. your column, no matter how fantastic your program is, mm-hmm. if people don't know about it, you got a problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Helen and David, thank you all, and I hope people actually read the piece. All right.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
All right. Hey, listen, tomorrow, don't forget, folks, we're going to be broadcasting live.
Yes.
Live out at Arch Street United Methodist Church, 7:15 a.m. to 9 a.m. Remember, 7:15 is our start time for the month of December.
Mm-hmm.
Here we run 7-ish to 9 a.m. Looking forward to seeing each of you live and in person. Keep your fingers crossed, Facebook Live. We hope we've got this figured out. Think everything will be fine. You'll be able to see us there at Arch Street. If not, go to the app and just listen in. So you won't miss the show. You'll just miss seeing us clowning right there in Arch Street UMC.
and hopefully, hopefully folks will be able to come out. And, you know, on your way to work, you can stop in and check us out and check out the show and, you know, find out about the work that Power's doing, because they do really tremendous stuff. And, you know, we'd love to see you.
Yeah. I'm telling you, don't you want to come on out and be a part of it? Listen, all right, I'm going to put some wagers out here right now.
Uh-oh.
Facebook Live, you can help me with the answer real quick. How many cups of coffee do you think Denise is going to get tomorrow? How many cups? Just come on. One, two, five.
I'll say five.
You know.
Five?
You say five, Mike?
Oh, my God. And I'll go into city council, like, jittering.
Oh, you're going to be wired tomorrow,
Denise.
Oh, I'm
like, yeah.
The last time we did a live remote, Mike, on a different show, we were at we went to Uncle Bobby's bookstore, Mark Lamont Hill's store. And I can't tell you how much coffee. They were giving her free coffee there. People were buying her drinks like, hey, let me get your drink for you.
I was like,
oh, eight?
That might be an unhealthy amount of coffee.
I'm sitting there and like, where is all this coffee coming from?
Adrian James.
It's an endless barrel of coffee for you, Denise.
So Adrian says she's betting on 10 cups.
Wow.
Wow. Shirley put hers at 7.
Either way, right. Man.
Here's a different bet. How many do you think I'm going to get?
Oh, I'm sure somebody will bring you a cup of coffee.
0.
Or Ticino, or...
No, I take that back. I'll get one.
See, no, Mark, you set yourself up yesterday by saying you never get anything, so now you're going to get an overabundance of something tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to get one.
The listeners are going to treat you guys well tomorrow. I have faith in that.
Mike, one cup I get is going to come from Leslie. She always looks out. She holds me down. Yep. There you go. All right. Hey, look, folks, that's all we have today. Dawn says you're going to get 3, Denise.
Oh, good Lord.
Yep. Hey, that's all we have. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow morning live or on Facebook or on the air. That's all we have. Thanks for our amazing group of guests, and looking forward to a great day on tomorrow. Have a great one, folks.
Have a good day, everybody.